In December 1941, downtown Honolulu was bustling as usual. Sparkly Christmas lights were festooned over Fourth Street, and in the evenings, shoppers strolled from Chong's Silk House to the Ritz, or maybe to the Blaisdell Hotel for a cocktail.
Interrupt this program to bring you a special news bulletin. The Japanese have attacked Pearl Harbor, Hawaii.
Ted Tsukiyama is gray-haired now at 96, but he was at home in Kaimuki recovering from his junior prom when the Pearl Harbor attack happened.
When I saw the Japanese planes, I was swearing at them, "You damn fools, you, what do you think you're doing, you know, attacking America?" I mean, we had no question as to who we were or where we stood, but we knew that there are a lot of other people that didn't.
Life in Honolulu, 1941, Tsukiyama says, was pretty laid back.
Here, being a Japanese, Nisei, Japanese American, from our side, we felt no different from anybody else in our student population as well as otherwise.
Was there racial tension?
After Pearl Harbor, yeah.
But before?
No, I don't think so.
If there was no racial tension, it wasn't because races lived on equal terms.
From the Wailea Golf Course all the way to Diamond Head to Black Point Road, everything was all Haoles. If you were a non-Haole, you couldn't rent or live there. It was segregated, yeah.
Everybody kind of just accepted that?
That's the way it was. When you're underclass and you're nothing or nobody. Why? That's the way it was. We grew up that way, accepting it.
No, because the Japanese community overall had become very conservative in the 30s.
Jonathan Okamura, professor of ethnic studies, says while some Japanese in Hawaii banded together or pressed legal cases for equal rights and protection, most Japanese were afraid to challenge the establishment.
This is the assumption on the part of the planters, military, territorial government, that the Japanese community is a monolith. It's very split.
Okamura says most local Japanese didn't want to challenge the power structure. They simply wanted to move up in it.
They just went along with the Haole powers to be in this naive assumption that if Japanese cooperated with them, that the Haoles would respond in much more positive ways towards the Japanese community. They blamed the victims. So, Japanese are under the misimpression that Haoles are really out to get them.
What, you could ask, would make them think that? The word Japs was not recognized as a racial slur at the time, and before the war, the blanket term frequently lumped all ethnically Japanese, American or not, into one bucket. Throughout the war, the term Japs was used in mass media and in government posters with images of animals or humans with squinty eyes, round glasses, military caps, and buck teeth. Sample caption, "Stay on the job till every murdering Jap is wiped out." For people in Hawaii, Bishop Museum historian DeSoto Brown says day-to-day relationships were probably fine.
Having said that, there was this whole thing played up about, the Japanese all stick together and they all speak Japanese to each other. And are they plotting against us? Well, we can't understand them. We don't know.
For Japanese Americans, history would prove their loyalty. But at the time...
we're Americans with the face of the enemy.
How did that make you feel?
Not very good. I knew that there were some that kind of wanted to jump on the bandwagon. Most famous was the president of the telephone company. The guy's name was Balch. He came out and said, "Let's lock him up in concentration camp."
Since incarcerating over a third of Hawaii's population was unworkable, martial law was imposed to regulate all residents, says Bishop Museum historian DeSoto Brown.
When you read about it, it is a shocking situation because basically there was a military dictatorship, and that's truly what it was. There was no legislative process for passing laws. They took over whatever buildings or private property they wanted. They would send you a letter saying, "We've decided we need this property, and we will pay you this amount of money for it, and as of this date, we're taking it." And that's what they did all around the perimeter of Pearl Harbor, where there was still private property at that point.
Food and fuel were rationed. There were curfew and blackout restrictions. And under martial law, there were no civilian legal proceedings.
So you could just be sentenced, and that was it. And you had no appeal or anything. It's just, boom, done, next. And that went on for years.
Legal protests to martial law mounted. And though it was officially lifted in 1944, the military maintained a grip.
Finally, there was a case that went to the federal Supreme Court. And the federal Supreme Court in 1946 said this was unconstitutional. And they said they did it because Hawaii was a territory. It didn't have the same rights as a state. This is one of the main reasons that after World War II, people were saying, look, you treated us as second-class inferior people. If we're a state, you won't be able to do that. We want to be a state.
World War II certainly changed Hawaii, and the legacy of the Japanese-American experience through that war has particular resonance today. We'll take a look at that next. Noe Tanigawa, HPR News.